prices have increased over 40%. Energy prices have increased over 20%. Wheat and gas prices have increased over 70%. What's going to be next? Do you see these trends reversing or even stabilizing? All fiat currencies have always failed and collapsed their economies on their way down. The Roman Empire, China, France, Argentina, Finland, Mexico, Russia, Zimbabwe all tried fiat currency and all collapsed into chaos. Meanwhile, the dollar has lost over 97% of its gold value since 1971, when an ounce of gold was valued at $35. If your assets are in paper, you are in danger. Protect your assets with gold and silver. Visit Discount Gold and Silver Trading at DGScoins.com. That's DGScoins.com or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 800-375-4188. Protect yourself and your family.
Welcome to Thursday's edition of Financial Survival, sponsored by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. I'm Dave Allen. Melody taking care of other client business today. For all your gold and silver needs, call us toll-free at 1-800-375-4188. For the next hour, congested as I am, apologize in advance, I'll be bringing you some opinions and commentary on the economic and political news of the day, Thursday, December 21, 2023. Happy Winter Solstice Day, ladies and gentlemen. Yeah, how about it? The Winter Solstice, the shortest day and longest night of the year in the Northern Hemisphere, occurring annually between December 20th and 23rd. Today's solstice is marked by the point at which the North Pole is at its farthest point from the sun during its yearly orbit around it. Santa's homeland is now approximately 23 degrees away from the sun. Despite the temperatures outside, the winter solstice is considered the astronomical beginning of winter. Meteorological winter actually begins December 1st and lasts until the end of February. It's marked by the coldest average temperatures of the year. The good news, it's now less than 90 days till spring. Well, today is also National Homeless Persons Remembrance Day, so I'll have more on our country's homelessness problem in today's second segment. Why don't we get to today's market report? In the precious metals market, spot gold in the New York market up $8 and change, rounds to $2,058. Silver up 5 cents, $24.61. Platinum down about $3 at $983. And palladium up about 60 cents at 1,255 and change. Other commodities, we have natural gas up big today, over 5% at $2.58. Domestic crude oil down slightly, about 21 cents a barrel to $74.01. On the currency markets, U.S. dollar index also down today, about 0.6% at 101.8. Treasury's 10-year yield up just a tad, 0.015, to yield 3.89. The 2-year down actually, the 0.02, to yield just shy of 4.35. And in the equities, reversed yesterday's seeming recent anomaly, big reversal yesterday. Dow Jones up today about a little under 1%, 322 points, closing at 37,404. NASDAQ up 1.25, 186 points, close at 14 rounds to 964. And the S&P up over 1% at 48 points at 4,746 and change. Pardon the background noise. My studio dog seems to be a little rambunctious. A bunch of her canine species walking in the neighborhood. So sorry for that distraction as well. Hey, good news in the housing market. Home loan financing costs eased again this week, pulling the average long-term mortgage rate down to a six-month low. Average rate on a 30-year mortgage dropped to 6.67% from 6.95 last week, according to Freddie Mac today. A year ago, the rate averaged 6.27. Now, the latest drop in rates is the eighth, as in many weeks. The average rate is back to where it was in, I believe I inadvertently muted my mic. Borrowing costs on 15-year fixed-rate mortgages, popular with homeowners refinancing their home loan, also fell this week, with the average rate falling to 5.9. From about 6.4% last week. A year ago, it averaged about 5.7. Mortgage rates have been easing since late October, when the average rate on a 30-year home loan reached, 7.8%, according to Freddie Mac. According to mortgage bankers, they were right at 8%, in any event, the highest since late 2000. The yield, the decline in yield has tracked the trajectory of the 10-year Treasury yield, which lenders generally use as a price guiding their loans. The yield, which in October surged to the highest level since 2007, has been falling on hopes that inflation is cooled enough for the Fed to shift to cutting rates, after pulling them dramatically higher since last March 2022, that is. Investors' expectations for future inflation, global demand for treasuries, and what the Fed does with its benchmark Fed funds rate certainly influences rates on home loans. And of course, the sharp run-up in mortgage rates that began last year has pushed up borrowing costs on home loans, and that certainly reduced how much would-be home buyers can afford, even as home prices have kept climbing due to that stubbornly low supply of properties on the market. Some economists, in fact, several, are already forecasting that home sales will increase next year as mortgage rates continue to ease, leading to a pickup in the inventory of homes on the market. But of course, we shall see, won't we? In other news, the Philadelphia Fed said today that its gauge of regional business activity fell to negative 10.5 in December from negative 5.9 a month earlier. Any reading below zero indicates deteriorating conditions. Economists were actually expecting a month-to-month improvement to a negative 4 reading in December. This is the 17th negative reading over the past 19 months. The Philly Fed's barometer on new orders dropped sharply to negative 25.6 after a slightly positive reading of 1.3 the prior month. The shipments index remained in contraction territory at negative 10.8. The measure on six-month business outlook actually rose to 12.1 from a negative reading of 2.1 in November. That's the highest reading since July. So there is some optimism in that manufacturing outlook. The Empire State Index, which is a similar measure of factory activity in New York State, fell to negative 14.5 in December from a positive 9 the prior month. And of course, the National ISM Factory Index has been in contraction mode for 13 straight months now. December data will come in early January. Economists say that capital spending could pick up if long-term bond yields remain as low as they have been for the past month. Responding to the Philly Fed survey, economist Rubila Faruqi at High Frequency Economics said, we see downside and upside risks for the factory sector. Softer demand for goods and higher borrowing costs are headwinds to activity. However, a reshoring of supply chains, infrastructure projects, and the stabilization in demand, plus lower interest rates next year, should provide support to manufacturing output over time. Geez, everyone, even the pessimists, are upbeat these days. Well, it's jobless claims Thursday, ladies and gentlemen. Number of Americans filing new claims for unemployment benefits rose just marginally last week. The latest suggestion that the economy is regaining momentum as the year winds down. The smaller than expected increase in weekly claims, which gives rise to that supposed or reported momentum, it's reported by the Labor Department today, follows recent data showing retail sales unexpectedly rising last month and single-family housing starts and building permits hitting a year-and-a-half high. Now, the reports have already prompted economists to boost their growth estimates for the fourth quarter. The economy had been showing signs of stalling at the start of October. But other data out today showed a more significant cooling in inflation in the third quarter than previously reported. And, of course, that's bringing holiday exuberance on Wall Street. Economist Chris Rupke at FWD Bonds in New York said there's plenty to cheer about the economy, and next year should be even better as the Fed takes the brakes off the economy now that its inflation is going their way. Initial claims for state unemployment benefits increased to 205,000 last week. Again, economists had forecast 215, thus all the eggnog cheer. Jobless claims data are particularly volatile around this time of year because of the holidays, and they do appear consistent with the fairly healthy labor market, which experts say will likely keep the economy out of recession next year. I think it's still too early, but we will see. A new survey yesterday from the Conference Board shows the share of consumers viewing jobs as plentiful as the highest in 5 months. That's for December. We added 199,000 jobs in November, fewer than the monthly average of 240 over the past year. More than 150,000, more than the 150K positions created in October. Data out next week on the number of people receiving benefits after an initial week of aid, which is a sign of hiring, could shed more light on the labor market's fortunes this month. The so-called continuing claims slipped 1,000 to 1.865 million. During the week ending. Labor market strength also fueling consumer spending these days, keeping the overall economy afloat. In a separate report today, the government confirmed that economic growth accelerated in the third quarter. GDP, in its third and final estimate by the Commerce Department's Bureau of Economic Analysis, reported it increasing at 4.9% annualized rate in the third quarter, down from the previous 5.2% estimate. Still the fastest pace of expansion since the fourth quarter of 2021. The economy, which grew at a 2.1% pace in the second quarter, has been expanding at a pace far above what Fed officials regard as the non-inflationary growth rate of around 1.8%. The downward revision to GDP growth last quarter reflects downgrades to consumer spending and inventory. Now, the growth in consumer spending, which accounts for, 70% roughly of U.S. economic activity, was trimmed to a still lofty 3.1% rate from the previous estimated 3.6%. Largely as a result of downward revision to spending on international. Pardon me. Now, though the economy is settling into a more moderate growth path this final quarter, economists say the pace likely remains enough to fend off that dreaded recession. Estimates for fourth quarter GDP growth range from as low as 1.1% to as high as 2.7%. In addition to slower consumer spending, growth this quarter is expected to be restrained by a wider trade deficit and a slower pace of inventory building relative to the third. Now, another bizarre twist in Among some of our European allies, Turkey's central bank hiked its key interest rates by 2.5 percentage points today as part of an effort to combat high inflation that's left many households struggling to afford rent and essential items there. The bank's Monetary Policy Committee raised its benchmark rate to, listen to this, 42.5%. Delivering its seventh interest rate hike in a row to tame inflation, which rose to just about 62% last month. But hurrah, the bank signaled that the rate hikes, which took borrowing costs from 8.5 to where they are now, could soon end. In a statement, the bank said the committee anticipates to complete the tightening cycle as soon as possible. The monetary tightness will be maintained as long as needed to ensure sustained price stability. Now, the series of rate hikes in Turkey came after President Recep Erdogan, a longtime proponent of the unorthodox policy of cutting rates to fight inflation, reversed course and appointed a new economic team following his re-election in May. The team includes former Merrill Lynch banker Mehmet Simsek, who returned as finance minister, post he held until 2018, and Hafiz Guy Erkan, a former U.S.-based bank exec who took over as central bank governor in June. Prior to that, Erdogan had fired central bank governors who resisted his rate-slashing policies, which economists said ran counter to traditional economic thinking. Well, here's some other traditional non-economic thinking that signals a break heading into our first one. You're listening to Financial Survival. Stick around.
Is the bluebird here to stay? Is a new bird? He sings a love song as we go along. Walking in a winter wonderland.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity. Invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit DiscountGoldAndSilverTrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Here comes Santa Claus, here comes Santa Claus, right down Santa Claus Lane. Vixen and Blixen and all his reindeers pulling on the reins. Bells are ringing, children singing, all is merry and bright. So hang your stockings and say your prayers, 'cause Santa Claus comes tonight.
Hey, welcome back to Financial Survival. Sorry, this isn't Santa Claus, but it is Dave Allen. Melody off handling client orders today. She's at 1-800-375-4188. Be sure to ask her about any holiday coin specials. Also, check out our website at dgscoins.com. dgscoins.com. While you're there, look for the mailbox and sign up for our weekly newsletter and blog, if you're not already members. Well, it's time for our final weekly segment of Levity of Golden. Levity is Golden of 2023. As regular listeners know, we usually reserve this segment of our Thursday program for a few moments of levity, as the title suggests, but today's topic is more of a serious one. Homelessness. U.S. homelessness reached a record high this year, according to data from the federal government released last week. In fact, my own humble opinion, it's become a national disgrace. Homelessness increased by about 12% nationwide since the end of last year, and it rose across all household types, according to the Department of Housing and Urban Development. About 653,100 people experienced homelessness on a single night in 2023. That's according to an annual count done in January. Now, this year's result is the highest number of people reported as experiencing homelessness in a single night since reporting began in 2007. Black, African, and indigenous people were overrepresented among the population experiencing homelessness, similar to previous years. Black people made up about 13% of the U.S. population, but they made up 21% of U.S. population living in poverty, and 37% of all people experiencing homelessness. And Asian American people had the largest percentage increase in homelessness, up 40% from 2022, about 11,600. Hispanic and Latinx people saw the largest numerical increase, up 28% from 2022. to over 179,000 in 2023. No word in this report how much of that is due to undocumented immigrants, illegal immigration. All families with children saw a 16% increase in homelessness. This group made up about 28% of people experiencing the phenomenon, or roughly 186,000 people. Unaccompanied youth made up 22% of all people under the age of 25 experiencing it. 61% of all homeless people last year were men, 38%, 39% women. Men also made up 9 out of every out of 10 homeless veterans. Now, again, HUD measures homelessness based on a single point in time count during the last 10 days of January. And this year's counts reflect a considerable lessening of the impact of the pandemic on shelter use. Pandemic-era social safety net programs expired throughout 2023, such as the income protections and moratoria, on evictions. Homelessness is emerging as a potential political issue in local elections this year, too, not surprising, particularly when coupled with related concerns about crime. Political pressures leading candidates and elected officials, even prominent Democrats like New York Mayor Eric Adams and California Governor Gavin Newsom, to embrace hard-line approaches such as involuntary commitment and arrest to clear illegal encampments. The entangled problems of homelessness and crime helped oust Chicago Mayor Lori Lightfoot and now are poised up in municipal races in Denver, Phoenix, and Salt Lake City. Increasingly frustrated residents in major cities across the country are pushing this issue to the forefront after decades of promises to help address the problem that's produced few results. The shift in tone and policy toward enforcement signifies an about-face from what was called a more compassionate approach that offers services to vulnerable populations. A recent poll in the Denver mayoral race, a national Democratic hub, found more than 70% embraced forcing people living on the streets with serious addictions to get help, and nearly 60% backed sweeps to clear illegal homeless camps. Democratic pollster Brad Kissam, who partnered with a Republican firm on the Denver survey, said, "Loving these people, hugging these people is no longer enough. Perhaps some tough love is in order." Now, advocates and service providers say the approach is more about expedient politics than helping people. Sarah Sadian at the National Low Income Housing Coalition said elected officials are turning away from long-term solutions that they know work, and instead they're turning to these out-of-sight, out-of-mind policies. Well, homelessness rates increased nationwide last year, up 6% from a low in 2016. A shortage of affordable housing is the key driver in homelessness rates. According to research, more so than even mental illness and drug addiction. The correlation between the two is most evident out west, where states see the highest concentration of homelessness coupled with the highest rent costs. California, Arizona, and Oregon saw some of the largest increases from 2020 to 2022 in this new federal report. In terms of housing, the hourly wage needed to afford a two-bedroom rental unit was at least $17 throughout the West. In six Western states, pay needed to top $23 an hour to afford that same unit. On the local campaign trail, affordability is a big talking point, but homelessness is the more forceful exclamation point. In Denver, it's the number one campaign issue. Gosh, I'm so sorry. and a differentiator among the candidates. Now, all the candidates believe affordable housing is the solution, but until it's built, the solutions being offered include sanctioned campsites, temporary housing in hotels, and forced commitments to mental and drug addiction facilities. In Phoenix, nearly every candidate in recent city council races listed homelessness or housing insecurity as their top priority. In one runoff race, which I believe was decided just the other day, incumbent councilmember Carlos Garcia faced an opponent who has used the worsening crisis there and its impact on neighborhoods as ammo against him. And in Salt Lake City, homelessness is a major focus of this year's mayoral race. Mayor Erin Mendenhall, who's seeking her second term in office, is facing two challengers who've been vocal critics of her efforts to reduce homelessness in the city. Look, it's a national challenge that isn't going away without tough and some costly decisions. Turning a cheek is one thing. Turning a blind eye to what's amounted to a disgrace will just make matters worse. And that, ladies and gentlemen, is this week's Levity is Golden. Excuse me. Well, on a completely different note, sales of new vehicles in the U.S. are expected to increase slightly next year. That as the automotive industry continues to normalize from the pandemic and other supply chain problems since 2020. Forecasts from leading automotive data firms are calling for an annual increase of between 1 and 4%, which equates to between 15.6 and 16.1 million new vehicles sold. That would be the highest since 2019. When more than 17 million new cars and trucks were sold domestically. Now, no breakdown in this particular report on how much, what percentage of these cars are internal combustion engines versus hybrid or electric vehicles. Now, since 2019, the auto industry has been battling production and supply chain snafus sparked by the global health crisis, with sales of less than 14 million vehicles in 2022, the lowest in more than a decade. So even a small increase in U.S. sales would be good for consumers and especially the economy. It would mean more vehicles are being produced, potentially easing recent affordability concerns amid high inflation, high interest rates, and record high new vehicle prices. Year ahead holds the promise of further increased inventory and enticing deals that consumers have eagerly awaited. Jessica Caldwell, who's Edmunds head of insights, said 2023's high interest rates are expected to linger, provoking conflicting market dynamics. Now, Edmund believes new vehicle pricing power for automakers has peaked, as improved inventory has driven incentives back into the market. And it's certainly good for the consumer. For investors, increased sales are good, but lower prices and rising incentives are expected to be headwinds for many automakers that have produced record profits in recent years. Caldwell added, automakers specifically will weigh one other key consideration this coming year. Notably, are they satisfied with this newly established supply-demand equilibrium, or are they willing and able to push sales volumes closer to the pre-pandemic norms? The expected U.S. growth compares with a 2.8% year-over-year increase in auto sales globally forecast by S&P Global Mobility. is torturous, ladies and gentlemen. I'm sure it's as much for you as it is for me. Hey, Lisa Abramowitz asks in today's Bloomberg Surveillance, if everyone buys the dip, will there even be a dip? She notes that Wall Street is putting that notion to the test with an everything rally since the Fed's thinking about easing, shocker, last week. Fresh off yesterday's late equity sell-off for reasons that are still somewhat unclear. Well, tried to go into a reprimand mode there, ladies and gentlemen. Doesn't appear to be working. I can attribute that now to an Amazon truck, a FedEx truck, and a UPS truck, all outside delivering last-minute packages. Hey, in any event, there's an agreement around one theme out there. The Fed has rekindled the market's fear of missing out. Pfizer of too big to fail Citigroup, ticking his way through a list of positives, said the buy the dip stuff makes sense if you believe all the narrative that we have had out there. The rest of the S&P 500, he added, is looking attractive beyond the Magnificent Seven. Bonds didn't join in yesterday's stock rout. Earnings growth wasn't great this year, but it didn't live down to analysts' fears. Now, Kaiser acknowledged the likelihood of bumps in the road, recalling that December 2022 was a little wonky, but he believes this is a time to buy. He says there's still a lot of cash sitting on the sidelines. If you're a retail investor sitting in a money market and you get told rates are going lower, you just missed a 20% rally in the S&P and a 50% rally in NASDAQ. And if you believe we aren't going into recession, I think there's the potential for money to start to bleed into the market. Even gave us a new label for the phenomenon, kind of a retail put alongside the Fed put. Now, Fed Chair Jerome Powell had to have known that he was lighting a fuse with his remarks last week. That's according to Franklin Templeton's Sonal Desai. But he did it anyway, right? And the enthusiasm he unleashed, Desai says, has triggered a too-far-too-fast slide in Treasury yields. She said, we're certainly not chasing that rally. And she has her eye on the next data dump, which, based on Wall Street's posturing, is being anticipated as supportive of the disinflation narrative. She says, if we see another massive rally after tomorrow's PCE number, I think we'll have greater conviction to lean more decisively against it. All Spring Global's Margie Patel, who's also optimistic about 2024, notes there's just a lot of cash out there. And about that cash, ladies and gentlemen, don't forget about physical gold and silver, and have plenty of it in your investment portfolio as insurance against continuing inflation and in anticipation of eventual falling interest rates. Hey, I hear some more music. You're lucky. It's another break. I'm going for a lot of water. Talk to you in a couple of minutes. You're listening to Financial Survival.
But as long as you love me so, let it snow, let it snow, let it snow.
Since the beginning of the United States, kings have sought it, nations have fought for it. It has been traded, borrowed, purchased, and stolen. There is a reason for it. To secure the blessings of liberty to ourselves and our posterity, invest with the security of gold and silver. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading at 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Listen to Financial Survival with your host, Melody Cederstrom, on Shortwave Radio. Visit discountgoldandsilvertrading.net or call 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. For the very best in gold and silver trading, call toll-free 1-800-375-4188. That's 1-800-375-4188. Call now.
Melody Cederstrom and CSE Talk Radio team up as Common Sense Voices of Integrity. I personally endorse Melody Cederstrom to be your trusted go-to expert for all your precious metal needs. Experts agree a financial crisis and even collapse is inevitable. Given our government's lack of economic leadership and self-interests of those in power, it's no longer a question of if you should purchase gold and silver, but if you will purchase gold and silver before it's too late. Melody encourages you to tune in each weekday morning. Visit CSETalkRadio.com. We both agree truth and education are the two significant factors in both our missions. There is a wealth of misinformation out there. Let Melody and Beth Ann help you sort through the chaos and bring you home to the truths that will ensure that you and your family are protected. Call Discount Gold and Silver Trading 1-800-375-4188 or online at dgscoins.com. Melody and Beth Ann are strong forces together working to preserve liberty and bring America home.
Through the years we all will be together, if the fates allow. Hang a shining star upon the highest bough, and have yourself a merry little Christmas. Now.
Hey, one more time today. Welcome back to Financial Survival, brought to you by Discount Gold and Silver Trading. 1-800-375-4188 for all your physical precious metal needs. I'm Dave Allen. CNBC's Alex Sherman writes today, let's say you have a crush on two people and you find out one of them may like you back. Do you just start dating that person, or do you find out what the other person thinks too? Well, that's where he says Warner Brothers Discovery finds itself today. Sherman reports that the company has held preliminary merger talks with Paramount Global, the media conglomerate controlled by Sherry Redstone. Warner Brothers Discovery CEO David Zaslav met with Paramount Global CEO Bob Bakish on Tuesday to discuss what a merger of the companies could look like. That's according to people familiar with the matter. Crush, Sherman warns, may actually be too strong of a word here. This isn't a case of both companies lusting for each other. It's more of a partnership of necessity. He says neither company has a clear future competing for content in a streaming-dominated world where Apple, Amazon, Netflix, and Google have far larger balance sheets. They just want to survive and boost their share price. But he wonders, maybe Warner Brothers Discovery would rather merge with Comcast NBC Universal. That is, if Comcast is open to it. But there may be regulatory issues with that scenario. It's unclear whether federal officials would allow Universal and Warner Brothers to come together. This year, they're the top two U.S. movie studios by revenue. While smaller than Warner Brothers or Universal, Paramount's still a top five studio most years. Comcast also owns cable news channel MSNBC, which may or may not be a problem for regulators, given that Warner Brothers owns CNN. A deal structure would be important here. If Comcast spins out NBC Universal to merge with Warner Brothers Discovery, it would theoretically give Zaslav debt-free earnings to strengthen the combined company's balance sheet. And that, Sherman surmises, might be more enticing than taking on Paramount Global's $15 billion of debt. Warner Brothers has nearly $45 billion in debt and has worked to bring down its leverage all year by boosting free cash flow. Buying Paramount Global might be viewed as starting over for Zaslav, who hasn't made many friends in Hollywood with his intensive cutting of both jobs and content spending. It's also possible that Comcast CEO Brian Roberts wants to hold on to NBC Universal and just isn't interested in double down on legacy media right now. NBC is Universal isn't in merger talks with anyone at the moment. According to a person familiar with the situation. Generally speaking, Comcast has similar assets to Paramount. They both have broadcast networks, NBC for NBC Universal, CBS for Paramount Global. And they both own a slew of aging cable networks. NBC Universal is Bravo, E, and USA. Paramount Global's includes Nickelodeon, MTV, and Comedy Central. And both companies have money-losing streaming services. Paramount Global owns Paramount Plus and Showtime, and NBC Universal has Peacock. Well, Sherman says NBC Universal probably isn't a merger fit with Paramount Global. Both companies' ownership of broadcast network likely makes that deal a non-starter, in fact. Now, opening discussions with Paramount Global should give Warner Brothers Discovery a read on where Comcast stands on any kind of deal making. Is Comcast okay with Paramount Global and Warner Brothers Discovery merging? Or does Roberts want to combine with Warner Brothers Discovery instead, leaving Paramount without an obvious partner? Would that lead Redstone to selling her stake in National Amusements and letting someone else like David Ellison at Skydance figure out the future for Paramount? Well, Sherman says one thing's for certain. Those discussions have now begun, and they will almost surely heat up in the coming weeks and months. The starting gun has been fired. Welcome to 2024. Stay tuned, because you know that federal regulators are. Now, staying on top of your student loans and consistently investing for retirement are great steps to improve your overall financial well-being and credit rating. Alas, it looks like some student loan borrowers are choosing or having to choose one or the other. As payments resumed on federal student loans in October, two-thirds of borrowers now say they have had to or will have to reduce their retirement contributions to restart their student loan payments. According to a recent survey from Alliance Life, an even higher percentage, 82%, say their student loan payments will make it difficult just to make ends meet. So it's not surprising that many borrowers are looking for places to make room in their budget, but pausing retirement contributions may not be the best way to do that. Here's why the experts are saying cutting your retirement contributions should be a last resort, and how it might get easier to save while paying down your student debt. Now, you have to meet the minimum monthly payment on your student loans. That's the bottom line. And if that means not being able to contribute to retirement savings for a period, well, it's okay for it to take priority in order to avoid the consequences like damage to your credit score or even having your wages garnished. But if you can contribute anything to a retirement savings account, it's smart to do it, especially while you're relatively young. Now, although you might have more money to contribute when you're older, you can't make up for lost compounding years. And I'm referring to compounding interest or investment earnings, which help your investments grow, even leapfrog over time. Time invested is the key here. The longer you wait to start investing, the less time your returns will have to grow. Belinda Satterley, who's a certified financial planner and founder of Marathon Wealth Management, says compounding is so powerful for growing wealth. So ideally, you're always able to contribute something to retirement accounts. But if you absolutely need to cut back, Sutterly believes you're better off reducing your retirement savings, but continuing to save and invest versus not investing at all, and then investing some or more later. Plus, the fact that if you're contributing pre-tax dollars via an employee-sponsored retirement account, like a 401k or a 403b, will lower your adjusted gross income, which in turn could lower your monthly student loan payment. Income-driven repayment plans, like the Saving on a Valuable Education plan that launched this year, use the adjusted gross income to calculate your required monthly payment. The lower your income, the lower your payment, even down to $0 a month for individual borrowers who earn $32,800 a year or less. Excuse me. Employer 401k matching is a fairly common employee benefit in the private sector. Particularly, that's smart to take advantage of when available. If you can, try to contribute up to the full amount your employer will match. In fact, contributing less is like leaving free money on the table. Because when your employer matches your investment, it's like getting a guaranteed 100% return. If your employer matches your contributions up to, say, 5% of your salary, aim to set your payroll contribution at that rate or higher. And in 2024, employers will be able to match your student debt payment with a contribution to your retirement account. Under the Secure 2.0 Act passed by Congress and signed into law by the President in 2022, companies are able to offer this new benefit to help employees get out of debt without sacrificing valuable years of saving for retirement. Main priority right now may be to be completely debt-free, and that's good. But if you're looking for overall financial well-being, you'll probably have to multitask a bit while you're paying off your student loans. Hey, last today, let's take a little look back at an eventful year in politics, business, finance, whatever you want to call it, and in life. Many of the trends set in motion this year are going to have an impact on next. Here are some of the more memorable stories we've talked about on financial survival. The Fed's fight to tame inflation. The elusive soft landing for the economy may yet be in sight after the Fed's fight to cool inflation was driven by 11 interest rate hikes, which many pundits initially feared was too much. Although analysts and experts expect consumer spending, again, which makes up 70% of our GDP, to slow next year, America will likely still avoid an all-out contraction in growth. According to many, including the nonpartisan Congressional Budget Office. Then there was the abrupt ouster and employee-driven return of OpenAI chief Sam Altman last month. And that coincided with the one-year anniversary of ChatGPT's debut, a rather fitting way to mark a frenzied period in the generative AI race. Crazy. And who ran the world? Well, girls did. Beyoncé's Renaissance World Tour wrapped in October after nearly 60 shows, raking in more than $570 million. At one point, people were paying money for seats where they couldn't even see the concert. Taylor Swift entered her latest era of dominance through the sheer economic power of her tour and concert movie, over $1 billion, while managing to register new voters and even bringing some new attention to the NFL. And the Barbie movie, like it or not, brought to life through director Greta Gerwig and actress Margot Robbie, gave theaters a much-needed lift by becoming the highest-growing film this year with over $1.4 billion in worldwide box office sales. And, of course, there was plenty of banking drama. The spring's collapse of Silicon Valley, Signature, and First Republic banks rightfully led to worries about the strength of the U.S. banking system and possible depositor runs. Our friends Pam and Russ Martins at Wall Street on Parade reminded us almost every day, certainly every week, of the peril fraught in especially the nation's too-big-to-fail banks, which have become, in their words, risky trading casinos which seem to have carte blanche under their supposed regulators, the Fed, the OCC, the FDIC, and others, and their supposed legislative overseers in an ever-growing conflicted Congress. And hundreds of thousands of Americans won better labor contracts and working conditions this year in industries that couldn't be more different. It was felt from rail to retail coffee chains across car manufacturing, unionized and not, and from Hollywood to hotels. The combination of changing attitudes toward organized labor, together with an emboldened workforce from thanks to the pandemic and leverage from a tight labor market, has helped union and non-unionized workers alike with everything from higher wages and more time off to air conditioning and UPS trucks and assurances that AI won't interfere with artists' credits or rights. You remember that company WeWork? A couple years ago, it was valued at nearly $50 billion. The company's current market cap sits below $30 million as it tries to emerge from bankruptcy protection with a stronger balance sheet. The company's one of the first high-profile businesses with a sprawling national footprint to file for bankruptcy in the post-COVID high-rate world. Then there was Bed Bath & Beyond's liquidation, and its next life is, well, just a brand. The golf tour rivals, the PGA Tour and Saudi-backed LIV Tour agreed to a surprise merger, but will they even get it done? And the implosion of OceanGate's Expedition Titan submersible and the subsequent reflection on the extreme tourism industry. Ooh, what a tragedy. And of course, there were 91 indictments of a former U.S. president as he once again runs for election next year. Hey, Maya Angelou once said, if you don't know where you've come from, you don't know where you're going. And that's all the time we have for today's program. I'll be back with Melody Tuesday, January 2nd. Melody will be back tomorrow with Butch to close out the week and put you in the mood for Christmas. Plus, be on the lookout for a weekly blog in your email inboxes. Thanks, as always, to our production engineer, Todd Waite, and to you for tuning into Financial Survival. I'm Dave Allen. Please have a safe and merry Christmas and a happy, healthy 2024. Bye-bye.